From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Patrick Mahomes has changed the football world, and now he's setting his sights on doing more. Welcome back to Locked On Chiefs. I'm Ryan Tracy, the founder of Rogue Analytics, as well as RGR Football on YouTube. And this is Locked On Chiefs. Welcome to the show, and I want to start with the man that is the talk of the town, as he should be, all the time. And it's been more so this offseason that it's been about things off the field, certainly because we haven't seen them. But the news comes out that Patrick Mahomes is joining probably one of the few athletes on the planet that might actually be bigger than him in LeBron James. And it's not anything that has to do with protests or anything negative. It's trying to be positive. He is joining the More Than a Vote campaign with James. And that's a new change for Patrick Mahomes. It's important because it takes him from not someone who is just pointing out the negative, but trying to make a positive change, not only in the country, but in the world. And I think that's important. It's very interesting to me, too, that we now have this confirmation about just what the star power is of Patrick Mahomes and how lucky the Chiefs are to have a guy that steps outside of the box, so to speak, every now and then to take on something that's important. And teaming with an icon like LeBron James is significant. It puts you on a tier that is seldom seen. It is difficult to imagine that there is a bigger quarterback in the NFL at this moment. But now you're talking about being an international star, being somebody that crosses platforms, crosses sports. And it's all to get on to the positive side of pushing, enabling, getting people aware of that their life, their rights, their way of going about their life in America is more than just a vote. I think that's a good way to reinforce what is everyone's right to vote in this country. And it lets him become not just a quarterback, but a leader overall. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about how he has really taken on this mantle. And for a guy who's going to be 25 years old, it's pretty incredible to see. But I think that this elevation for what fans of other sports can recognize as a clear association between LeBron James and Patrick Mahomes is significant. Now, Tyrann Mathieu has been on board with him as well in making this a specific thing in lieu of what we've seen over the last few months. But again, trying to take what is a situation where a lot of people are protesting, which is certainly making a point, but also turning it to the positive and looking to the future where they can exercise everything that everyone else gets to exercise in being their vote for the future. That's going to be something that is going to be going on not only in Kansas City, but around the country, and he's going to be a big part of it. So much so that it's got the NFL talking about it. And there was a meeting Thursday, a virtual meeting, but with Roger Goodell that started off, and we're going to talk about all the details about it here coming up in the next segment. And then we're going to talk some about the speed on defense, trying to match what the NFL has done to try and catch up to the Kansas City Chiefs in our last segment. Dan Harms is going to join me. And when we get there, the NFL started today. First thing on the agenda was Roger Goodell talking about supporting the athletes in the NFL in trying to get out the vote, in trying to make the vote something that not just people of maybe an older age, like maybe you've seen 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, somebody who's more focused on the bigger picture. Generally, when you're trying to get out those that have just gotten the right to vote, have just become of age, it's a little bit difficult. I think that's something that athletes in particular have a chance to really reach in and grab the attention of younger people. This is going to be very interesting, and Roger Goodell intends to support them, not only himself, but through the league. And that was the first thing to tip off this meeting. It's not the only important thing. When we get back, we're going to dig into some of the other developments that have the Chiefs and the league kind of riding two sides of a fence. And I got to tell you about Built Bar, because these things are amazing and they taste incredible. Built Bars are the protein bars that taste like a candy bar. There's 16 amazing base flavors, and they always have something new, special additions, or whatever comes to their mind. And they're covered in 100% real chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, and they're perfect for a health-conscious guy or a family like mine. They help you lose and maintain weight while indulging in a delicious snack that you can go back to over and over again. They're low calorie, low sugar, but they're high in fiber and high in protein. They're somewhere between 110 and 170 calories, and they always have low net carbs. They're a great snack and something that gives you the macronutrients that you need. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Now, as the focus of the virtual meeting for the NFL happened today, a couple of things came through, and I'm going off of the reports that we've received about the content of this meeting, and a couple of contradictory things. I have to point out that it feels like the NFL is trying to play both sides of the fence here, and it's a bit concerning because on the one hand, they have decided that they are canceling the Hall of Fame game that kicks off the season and really highlights the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And they just feel that it's not something that they can move forward with at this time. And I guess that makes sense. There is a lot of virus creeping back up in a number of places, one of them being Texas. The Cowboys were slated for this opening game. And here's the thing. They're canceling the game. They're also canceling until, they called it a postponement, until 2021. The actual ceremony, the enshrinement itself, is going to be held in 2021 for this class. That is a lot of caution, and I can't say that I feel that that's unnecessary. I think caution is what's called for here. In fact, Malcolm Jenkins of the Saints even said that he's wary of even coming back to practice until this threat of the coronavirus is eliminated.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players or whoever is going to participate, where we have over 2,000 players, even more coaches and staff. We can't do that. And so we're end up being kind of on this trust system where the honor system, where we just have to hope that guys are social distancing and things like that. And that puts all of us at risk, not only, you know, us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families. I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to the place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
And that sounds very much like somebody who's willing to sit out and not participate at that point. Maybe that's what the NFL is concerned about, because when you push back the opening game of the preseason, as well as the enshrinement ceremony, that sets a tone of not only caution, but very much concern about the spread of the virus amongst players. And they should be concerned. This is something that has proved to be very, very virulent. In order to keep them safe, being cautious is what this calls for. Now, this isn't talking about the cancellation of anything else. This is very specific to that very first weekend, August 6th, it was scheduled for. And it clearly flies in what they've had to deal with in the number of guys getting sick from workouts together off the field, not organized team activities, obviously. But even Tom Brady holding practices with his skill position guys against the advice of the NFL is something they have to be concerned with. It's definitely something that fits the pattern we've seen with Brady, but it's more of a risk this particular offseason than it has been in years past. And so that's what I mean by, on one hand, they're being overly cautious and they're making sure to take some things out, move some things back that maybe they feel are not that critical. Although I would argue if I was a Hall of Famer that I would find that pretty critical. But on the other hand, they have also, in the same meeting, on the same day, said they expect camps to open on time on July 28th. Now, that is a bit of, like I said, playing both sides of the fence, trying to get two things done and talking out both sides of your mouth. You're either cautious or you're not. Canceling a game and a Hall of Fame ceremony a week after you're still proposing on opening camps on time and putting all those players into the same rooms, the same practice facilities, the same training facilities, that's a bit of a misnomer. I feel like that doesn't really go together. That doesn't walk down the same road in making those two decisions. I don't know if that's going to stick. I don't know if it's going to be able to stick, to tell you the truth. And it's going to be interesting to see how the players react to it. We're hearing more and more rumblings of the players not feeling comfortable at this point. And they're waiting on specifics of what Dr. Alan Sills, the chief medical officer of the NFL, said today, that they're setting up a quote-unquote very ambitious testing program. That doesn't give them a whole lot of information. What we've heard is they want to test three times a week, and they want to try to keep that contained to a bubble of where they actually have the players. Now, I'm not sure players are going to buy into that, too, from Malcolm Jenkins' reaction. I don't think that that's really going to go over very well, but the question becomes, what's the line that you're walking? It's going to be difficult, and I think it's going to be very much something that, I mean, everyone pays attention when training camp opens. It's a big, momentous thing every summer, but this year in particular, what we're going to have to pay attention to is exactly how it goes in the first 48 hours, the first 96 hours, and see what happens. See if there are infections. See who comes away with, we have to do something above and beyond what we've already set out to do. And that itself is if there's enough testing kits to go around, if they have that protocol in place and they have the people to actually do the testing. There's still a lot of question marks to go over about what's going to go on. This meeting today, there where they stressed risk reduction and mitigation. I find that interesting. Again, it has to be expanded on, but definitely seems to be the theme that the NFL is going towards. And I think it's going to be what we're going to see the Chiefs do in particular is come up with a very specific plan through Rick Burkholder, who is a leader amongst the athletic training community in the NFL, honestly, in all sports, but specifically in the NFL. I think he'll have a heavy output into what the league thinks, but I do feel like the Chiefs are going to be in a unique position to have some leeway to do some things that might be a little more cautious than maybe some of the rest of the league. We're going to have to see how that works out. It all comes down to preparing the team to get on the field, and whether that happens on time in the preseason after the first weekend or not remains to be seen. We're going to have to keep a close eye on that. But some of the things that we're going to have to do is see what the speed element is that the Chiefs are going to be able to put on the field in defending some of the changes that the league has made around them. When we get back, we're going to talk real quick about some of those things and who came gunning for the Chiefs this offseason. So the offseason was very telling in the way that a lot of NFL teams and the league in general kind of went after a concept of how they can combat Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense in particular, but the Chiefs as a team. And I want to bring in Dan Harms, who's been doing some film work with me over at RGR Football on YouTube. And this is a great conversation about what that comes down to. Well, me and Dan back together again to talk about your team, the Kansas City Chiefs, and what's going on with them. And honestly, what's going to go on with them, because this is going to be an interesting year. We have to talk that everybody is gunning for this team. And I mean everybody.
Everybody.
It's not just the Ravens, although I know what the Ravens are doing, and it is about this particular team. For me, let's bring it in a little bit before we go too far. Who do you think in the division made the biggest strides?
You know, I really do like what Oakland did. I think that they added a lot of good offensive pieces, period. Like they have, I think it was, what, Lynn Bowden Jr. was that? I think that the idea that they wanted to do is just add speed, obviously. They think that in order to be able to compete with the Chiefs, you have to emulate the Chiefs. But you still have Derek Carr as your quarterback. So you're not exactly going to be emulating what the Chiefs do. You're going to be trying to make some kind of, you know, aftermarket product that may not look the exact same because the quarterback you have isn't near the caliber. But I tell you what, Josh Jacobs is a player. I absolutely love that running back, and I can't stand to say something good about the Raiders, but I love Josh Jacobs. So I think that the Raiders in a few years probably have a better chance outside of most of these teams, except if Drew Lock takes some incredible steps, like if he takes some real steps forward.
And it's funny that you say that, because I see a lot of like prognosticators. It looks like everybody's done. They're not going to be suggesting that the Chargers are going to win this division like they do every damn year, but. Now it seems to be the Broncos, like, oh, look, they have a quarterback. Let's go.
Colin Cowherd.
Oh, I didn't even see that one. I wasn't even talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
No. Oh, okay. Well,
they're going to win the division. Remember?
Oh,
now it's the Broncos going to win the division.
I missed the memo, bro. I don't understand.
Okay, because he got Andy Reid on the show the next day, and then he was pretty much smacking down. So that was good.
Well, it's funny, folks, if you missed last week when Matt Derrick was on, He told a story about what happens when Andy Reid gets pissed off about a media member at practice. That's always fun. So go back and check that out. And I wouldn't want Andy getting mad at me, but I like a motivated Andy. Not like he's not, but hey, you know, let him keep talking, because I agree with you. I think they have more weapons in Denver, and I like what they did. I'm a big Sutton fan. I think Sutton, outside of Tyreek Hill, I think Sutton's the best receiver in this division. And yes, I'm talking to you, Keenan Allen.
Yeah, I like Keenan Allen, and a lot of people try to talk about him being so underrated. But what does he do in division games? He disappears. Right. He just disappears. He can't play against teams that you're supposed to beat in order to win your division. And there's a reason that the Chargers haven't been doing it all that much. It's because their players don't come to play in these big games. And then Phillip Rivers just was throwing 4 or 5 interceptions a game against the Chiefs alone. So, I think that when we look at just the kind of things that Courtland Sutton does from a route running, is still got some flat out speed to burn for a bigger guy. And then just the area to catch the football from wherever it is. So Drew Lock is going to be able to make some errant throws, and he's going to benefit from it still with the catch radius that Sutton has. And like I said, I don't like complimenting guys, the teams in the division so much, but Josh Jacobs and Courtland Sutton are two guys that I love their game.
You know, I like them too. And obviously, I mean, when you talk about, there's a couple of trends here that I kind of enjoy. Judy and Ruggs both go to AFC West teams. Both the KJs go to AFC West teams. I don't know if I prefer Hamler or Hill, but we'll get into that in terms of fit later. But both underneath guys, both two guys that can stretch and run good routes, or either or, whatever you want to call it, and two guys that can play underneath and take advantage if you play over the top too much. Yeah. And that brings me back to where we have to keep our attention focused. And we talked about Fenton a week ago. I did a film review the week before that on Jerry Sneed, who I think is going to get a lot of playing time. And I know something that we have to cover is all these teams trying to stretch, all these teams trying to combat and put up points. Who do you think is the most important linchpin in defending that for the Chiefs defense?
It's got to be Juan Thornhill. Really, we talk about the Chiefs defense when they played last year, did a lot of two deep safety looks. And there's a lot to do that goes into that. And I think that a lot of it has to do with Spags wanted to find out exactly what his corners are. You know, he's got Charvarius Ward, who came in as his first year full-time starter with Breland, who's been a solid number two a lot of his career. And so he's got to feel out a process of what these corners can do, especially guys like Fenton, who played in the slot and on the outside. He's just got to see what they can do. And using two deep safeties like that with Matthew and Thornhill allows corners to really play free on the outside. And if they release to the inside, then they can kind of wait and see and let some of the middle linebacker and the safeties kind of work with that inside. They don't have to follow them all the way through their route. And especially when it comes to Charvarius Ward, he is best when he's able to play press man and then turn and run with a receiver. He's got some good long speed and long arms that can help combat that kind of situation. So I think that Thornhill being fully healthy, as healthy as he can be early in the season, is going to be the biggest key to help this defense kind of stay in terms of keeping tops on those offenses.
And I mean, and then there's all these rumors, folks. I'm going to talk, by the time you see this, I probably have already talked about Jamal Adams and what that looks like and what a long shot that is, but we'll get to that in a minute. And Dan's going to, you're going to have an article on Arrowhead, guys, about Charvarius. And that's where I want to focus right now, because I agree with you. Press man's what he's got to do. I think when we saw lapses from him last year, and I do feel 2019 was an improvement for him.
Yeah, definitely.
But when we saw lapses, several of them were in zones or even man coverages where you had to do a lot of thinking. That one with Fuller in the playoffs, so with the streak where you had to know what your assignment was over the top, that got away from him a little bit. I think he's very instinctual, and when he's uptight and able to use those long arms and be impressed, that's where you got to be with him. And if he's going to be this season the top corner you have, I think that forces you to have to play man more than maybe Steve Spagnuolo had wanted to before.
Yeah, and I actually do have my articles already been on Arrowhead, guys, for probably about a month now on Charvarius Ward. And that play you spoke about with Will Fuller up the sideline on the left side, I think it has more to do with his ball location than anything, because he's right there. He turns with Fuller, and he runs up the sideline, and then he's looking for the ball, and he just couldn't find it. And that's when you see him kind of stop a little bit, and Fuller just goes right by him because he already knows where the ball is. And he makes a big play, and Fenton brings it down eventually. But I think that you know, Sam Madison talked about it in one of the interviews about watching film properly and understanding film. And I think that's such a big part of these young guys. You know, Tre'Davious Ward's 24 years old and you're coming into the NFL and having to learn to, you know, break down film better and see the speed of these guys in person and also being able to break it down on your own. So, you know, seeing Will Fuller's speed is one thing, but knowing, you know, when the quarterback wants to throw the football and the timing kind of thing is all about seeing the tendencies and the footwork of a quarterback while you're in that moment. And I think that Ward's eyes still haven't developed fully yet. And I wouldn't expect them to be an undrafted free agent and then, you know, 24 years old. So it's not like he's just going to come in and be great at locating the football, seeing a quarterback's tendencies with his footwork and timing and that kind of thing. So there's still room to grow. And I think that he can figure that out in this offseason. We can see a step forward to maybe not being a great number two like I think he is, but instead being maybe a lower tier number one corner in the NFL.
Yeah, and that's where I think his potential is. Yeah. It is an increment that he's got to achieve, but I agree with you. And I think for a lot of young players, and there are a ton, if you take Bashaud Breeland out, if he's suspended, you take him out of that room, they don't have anybody that's not 25. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think this might actually be an advantage for Tre'Davious in particular, Rashad Fenton as well. But in general, for the Chiefs secondary, that is generally young outside of Tyron and Dan Sorensen, they're young all the way around.
Yeah.
Just because all they can do right now is do film. All they can do is listen to Coach Madison.
That's true.
And they have to. If they can do that, like you said, this all sets up towards preparing game week. Film game week is what makes the differences on Sundays. That sets them up for where they have to get to. And I feel like, again, like Spagnuolo talked about the other week, still feeling out where you're going to put things. I do think that they're going to experiment with Fenton. I don't know where he's going to end up. But that film aspect allows them, once he gets a feel for what a guy understands better, he'll be able to tailor the coverages better. I do expect to see more switches. I'm tired of asking rookies to play inverted coverages, dropping from a nickel all the way to the high safety. That makes me cringe, I got to tell you.
Maybe they don't have
times. Hey, it worked. Philip Rivers, thanks for underthrowing that one, but I'm just saying, you know, it can't work every time. No, I want to see something that allows them to do different things because I think teams are going to prepare for that now.
Yeah.
And I think what you're going to need to see is Ward be able to take, like you said earlier, not having to let somebody ride to the inside because you know you have help at backer and safety, but be able to shut somebody down. That's what I got to see for him to be a number one.
I completely agree. And when we look at some of the things that he does well in terms of, I think that he anticipates routes from receivers pretty well. There's a clip that I found of him, you know, running over across the field with Austin Eckler, who is a shifty guy. And he saw he was going to run a drag route. He just is able to stay in that side hip pocket and run with them across the field and break up a pass. So I think that if we combine that with his maybe improving a little bit more in the terms of jabbing and getting that timing down to throw receivers timing off, which again points back to film, you see receivers and how they prefer to set up corners with their footwork and that kind of timing. You can throw a subtle jab in there and throw that off. Then he can get more comfortable in running with a receiver across the field and kind of sticking with him in that hip pocket. He did a couple of those things against Stephon Diggs where he held him a little bit, which doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Like, it happens.
If I'm being completely honest with you, outside of Bashaud Breeland's 12 penalties last year, yes, you heard that right. He had 12 penalties last year. I think almost all of them were holding or defensive pass interference. I don't have a problem giving up a few defensive holding penalties because I think being a little bit more physical in that aspect of the game will pay dividends in the game, especially in the playoffs where they don't call it as much. And that's something that Ward does very well. He's a physical guy. He doesn't back down from anybody. Ask DeAndre Hopkins. He does not back down from anybody. He'll get in there and be physical with you. So I do like through the area that he's going with. And I really hope that we can see, you know, Fenton mixed in there on the outside a little bit, because I think he's got some of that in him too.
I do too. And I think having the boundary will help him dramatically. And I like that you bring up Breeland's penalties. I'm pretty okay with it too. I would like them not to be there.
12's a little high.
It is a little high.
It gets on the upside for me.
He's really exposed with deep speed. So you got to give him something.
Yeah, I got no problem with that.
But that aspect that you bring up about the physicality being something that you can't really see in the stats. You can't see him play, but it helps as the game wears on. I think that's what I'm concerned about Ward. And I hope that not only is he studying film, I want to see Ward get a little bit thicker through the shoulders and be stronger. Cause like you said, that jab will help, but you got to be able to one arm that. You can't hope to always get two hands on a guy, especially the Hops and good Lord, everybody that's now in the AFC West. You got to be able to make that stab with one arm and, and not hold, but maintain contact. So you know where he is. I think if he gets stronger in his upper bodies, particularly in the shoulder region, that's going to help him maintain some of that pressure to keep a route from developing exactly how the wide receiver wants.
Yeah, and I watched a couple of games of him against Kenny Golladay and some of these bigger receivers, and he's still going to have some issues with that. But in the division itself, you know, you've got Mike Williams, Courtland Sutton. Those guys are physical big bodies that like to go up and catch the football, and you can't always hope that you're going to be able to, even if you're in the right position to make a play, they can go up and get that. So throwing off a lot of that timing is really going to pay dividends in terms of, you know, those catches where you're right there, but they go up and they get it because you're throwing them off of their route. So in this division, it's going to be interesting to see how they approach playing this speed style. Cause if they start attacking the outsides and then opening things up underneath, I'm not sure that the Chiefs have the speed on defense with their starters on at corner right now to be able to deal with that.
And that's the biggest concern for me. And that's why I'm focused on Ward, especially being able to disrupt. But I agree with you. The Chiefs have decided, they've made a decision that they're not investing in high draft picks or free agents at the corner position. And they've left themselves vulnerable to long speed. And I think it's because of Thornhill. Maybe Sneed helps that out. But I still feel like if you want to get good, if you want to get to the point where you're a top 12 defense, you have to be able to play more single high and you have to be more aggressive in what you're doing at the quarterback, especially in this division.
But do they really want to be top 12? I mean, do they need to be top 12? It's really what we're going here because they don't need to be a top 12 defense. I get it. We'd all love to see them be top 12, shutting, you know, offenses down, getting interceptions, but they don't seem to care so much about that. And it goes to show you exactly what they said. Look, we can help this defense with getting some of these corners later in the draft and then taking a guy like Willie Gay, who's really going to help solidify the linebacker position down the road. But everything else, corner, we can kind of manufacture production. We don't need guys like,
we're going to protect them,
Christian Fulton. We don't need that. You know, I would have liked to have Christian Fulton on the team. He plays really good man coverage.
Yeah.
Nah, we're good.
Yeah, I know. I just, sometimes I wonder, because I agree with you. You're absolutely right. They've proven they don't need a better defense to win a championship.
No.
But I want them to. I am tired of this.
I get it.
Years. And if you're going to play, I think particularly Sneed and Matthew, all of a sudden between the hashes, you're quicker. And I think that is where teams want to attack with guys like Ruggs, who I think needs to play in the slot, like Hamler, who I think needs to play in the slot. Yes. So that's what it comes down to. If Fenton has to go outside, is it Sneed at nickel? Is it Matthew all the way down at nickel? I think that's where the speed has to come in because that's where they have it. You got to get those guys on the field as much as possible.
Yeah, we could see a kind of a rotation. They could just kind of just throw guys in there at corner, nickel, safety, because they've got guys that can play literally at any position in the secondary. So maybe they have some fun with it and just kind of say, who's going to play who on this down? Just kind of put everyone's name in the hat and just throw it out and be like, hey, guess what? You're going to go play nickel. You're going to play outside. You're going to play safety. So it could actually really help confuse some of the offensive players too. They don't necessarily study for everybody a secondary they could possibly see, like the safeties and guys on the bench. So it could be interesting.
Yeah. And much like we could see the dawn of a mush coverage rather than a mush front.
Yeah. Just throw everybody at, see what sticks.
Right? I mean, I'm not ready for that. As a guy who thinks defense first,
that's I'm ready for me. That.
Yeah. Fine, whatever.
Let's get some 50 burgers in here, man. If a team scores 30, let's just have Pat throw the ball everywhere. I'm okay with it.
Just not enough. Well, that's a piece of our conversation, and we'll leave it at that for this week, folks. Thank you for checking us out. We'll be back with you on Monday. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to us today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Ryan Tracy is the founder of Rogue Analytics and the host of RGR Football on YouTube. Follow him there. Chris Clark is a senior analyst at ChiefsDigest.com, where you can get his work. Rate and review at Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you for listening.